right. Well, here we are. To dream again. To dare again. To feel enjoyment and happiness again. Or for the first time. To realize this is living. Be inspired. To see your life as an exciting journey of discovery. With your host of the Inspire Possibility Show, Mark Sussman.
Hey, everybody. It's Mark Sussnell. You're listening to the Inspire Possibility Show, the show that hopefully will make a difference in your life, that will inspire you to do great things, to think in a different way, and to be bold, and to really take action. And in terms of being bold, what would happen if you made a declaration that this next year is going to be the best year of my life? What if you say, I want to be inspired? Because I know we all would like to be inspired. I know I like to be inspired, and I work at it. That's why my show is called the Inspire Possibility Show. My website's Inspire Possibility. We all want to be inspired. And I've invited Kelly McGrath-Martinson to be my guest this week. And she wrote a book called A Year of Inspired Living. And this book will help you discover the life you want to lead, the person you want to be, and the impact you want to have on the world. She's a publisher of Natural Awakenings Long Island, a wellness magazine that promotes feeling good, living simply, and laughing more. And I know that all of us would like to laugh more. And so hopefully, along with Kelly, we'll have a few good laughs and be inspired. And each month she writes a letter to readers that helps them set out their monthly intention. So it's a good book to have, especially now going into the new year, to work with. And every week she has a topic to talk about where we reflect on, a space for us to write our reflections. And it's just a great concept, especially if you follow through on it. And so that's enough I'm going to say about Kelly and let her tell you the rest.
Well, first, let me say thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
And yeah, the book is called A Year of Inspired Living. It was sort of developed because of the letters that I write as a publisher for Natural Awakenings each month. And I would write these letters and I would get sort of a great response. And they were, like you said, different letters about, you know, setting an intention for the month or dealing with anger, putting away blame, you know, sort of heady topics in 800 words or less. And they got a great response and people really connected with them. So I put them together in a book. And then I was about to send the book to the publisher and I thought, it's not done. And I kept saying, something's missing, it's not done. And when I went back and looked at it, I thought, after each topic, wouldn't it be great if sort of my co-author was the reader, and where it wasn't where my book wasn't some, you know, just me telling you what I think works. It's more more interactive than that, you know. So
I like that.
That's the design of the book. Great topics,
like,
and
that,
you know, a place for people to reflect, for the reader to write their own sort of letter to the publisher.
So what I'm curious about is, we were talking off air, and I was saying that we teach what we want to learn. So you wrote this book of A Year of Inspired Living. So I'm not going to guess what was going on in your life. I'm going to let you tell us what it was that really inspired you to, or I don't even know inspired you, but just got you to say, you know what, I need to explore what it would be like if I really committed for a whole year to really to be inspired. So what were the circumstances in your life that that got you to make that decision? Because it is a decision to write this book.
Right. So I'll tell you, it was probably the 7 years prior to me, prior to my beginning journaling and beginning writing, that drove that writing. And I can give you sort of a brief version, but there was a period of time, it was a 7 year period of time, where within that time, my husband was diagnosed with cholangiocarcinoma, which is a very rare form of bile duct cancer. At the same time, my son, who was 4, was diagnosed with Landau-Kleffner, which is a very rare epilepsy. It's often mistaken for autism because the seizures happen in the middle of the night, and, you know, unless you're totally neurotic, you're not staring at your child in the middle of the night. You're all sleeping.
Right.
So you would never see the seizures. So it took a very long time for that to get diagnosed. At the same period of time, my sister passed away from head and neck cancer. So it was, I was going through all of this, and I wasn't really writing then. I was just sort of going, go, fast, you know, going literally from one hospital to the next, and literally from Mayo Clinic in Rochester to, where was it, MD Anderson in Houston, to Long Island Jewish Children's Hospital in New York, and then on the top, you know, along with all of that, I was a mother to a 3-year-old girl, and I was, I worked for a biotech company, and I was climbing the ranks at this company, and at the time, I thought that was my, you know, that was going to be my goal. I was going to be this top executive at a company, but then everybody was sick, and I was just running, and then everybody started getting better, and that was amazing for me, and everybody started getting healthy, and just when everybody was healthy and well, and I was ready to take the next step in my career, I get laid off. So, boom, they weren't ready for me, I guess. Yeah, so then that's when I started writing, because all of a sudden, I had no more, you know, for lack of a better word, I had no more fires to put out in my own life. I had no more, you know, work or work-minded goals. So I just started writing, and what I was writing was trying to figure out what I was going to do next originally. And then it just started turning into, like, processing the bigger items and the bigger things that had happened in my life in over the past 7 years. And then through that writing, I kept saying, you know, I didn't want to, in the biotech industry, I was working in research, and I was meeting patients at the end stage of their disease because our drugs were research. And I knew, I kept writing, like, I don't want to meet the person that's telling me at the very end, I wish I didn't smoke, or I wish I didn't eat that much sugar, I wish I exercised more or got more vitamin D. I wanted to be, and I kept writing this, I want to be the person that tells people how to prevent disease, how to live a calm life. And, you know, I kept writing it, and then all of a sudden it made me aware. I was aware when this magazine, Natural Awakenings, was for sale. I took my little severance package and a bit of a loan, and I purchased the magazine. So,
well, and
you
know,
the
this?
Writing for me was great. Yeah, and the funny thing, the funny end to that story.
When was this,
not,
Kelly?
Oh, sorry, 2012.
When you purchased
October.
When you purchased Natural, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, that, October
so
of 2012. Yeah, so I purchased it October, I guess we closed October, I don't know, let's say the 1st, and then, you know, I set up my basement office, and I bought a computer, and I hung up, like, signs to motivate myself, and, you know, the universe had different plans, as it often does, and about 2 weeks later,
isn't that true,
I live in Long Beach. Yeah. I live in Long Beach, and Hurricane Sandy came through and wiped out a third of my home, and that whole third was my office. So, again, what did I do? Excuse me. I wrote, you know, and I just, and for me, it was healing, and it still even wasn't about Sandy. I was just writing about things I wanted, things I needed to process, and it just, for me, it was life-changing, and then I just hoped and want this book to offer that same sort of life-changing opportunity. I think so many people don't journal, and I don't know if it's because, oh, that's for kids. I don't really know why, you know, because it's something so private. It's not like anybody sees it. But
right.
I don't really meet that many people that actively journal. I don't know why some people say, oh, it's too much to do, but you could do it once a month. You could do it whenever you get a spare minute, it doesn't have to be this thing. You know, there's different ways to do it. You could do it gratitude journaling every day. You could, but there's just different ways to incorporate it, and I just know it helped me. So I guess that's my backstory.
No, I've journaled. Yeah, no, I've journaled at different times, and I've journaled different times in my life, and actually, I have copies of journals that I wrote like 30 years, 40 years ago.
Wow. And I did.
Yeah.
I did.
Yeah, I do. And
that's great.
And I mean, right now I'm not journaling, or sometimes I have a gratitude journal, and I'll write in that. Although, again, I'm not as consistent as I used to be.
Right.
But I think that a gratitude journal is so as you were going through what comes to me, we're talking about gratitude and is as you're going through this crisis with your family. I mean, this incredible. Mm-hmm. I can just imagine when you were sharing your story, like how challenging that was. What were you grateful for? What were you grateful for then?
You know what? I still think, and it's something, I think that I was grateful then, and I'm grateful now that, for a few things really, not just one thing, but I was grateful that I had faith, because I think that was for me really important, and it was something I wasn't 100% actively utilizing my faith, but I had something I believed in, and regardless of what it is, what anyway, it's just nice to believe that maybe there's somebody else or something else bigger than this whole life we're leading, you know? So I think that helped me. I also think that as bad as, you know, the things that I was...
So back to this, Kelly, this idea of faith. So you believed in a essentially higher power, a higher intelligence, it sounds like.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And for me, it was important. I don't think... I think it would have been harder, you know, if I were to be, you know, a complete atheist. It would have been harder for me because it was just, you know, even just to lay in bed and pray and be like, please help me. Even if whoever I was praying to couldn't help me, it just felt nice to ask. You know what I mean? To believe that I could ask somebody.
Right.
You know? So I think just that belief that there's something else magical in the universe, I guess that helped me. I would say the other thing that helped me is realizing that as bad as it was at the time, every day I met somebody else and they had something that I would look at them and go, whew, glad that's not me. I'd literally be coming home on a plane from MD Anderson and talking to a friend who's going through a divorce I'd hang up and go, ooh, I'm glad that's not me, because, you know, everybody kind of has their own thing, you know? So I guess I was grateful for my own little perfectly imperfect world. I guess that's the best way to say it.
Right.
And it was imperfect. You know, it still is. But.
Again, when you were sharing your story, it was huge. I mean, what's going on with you? Remind our listeners, you're listening to the Inspire Possibility Show. Kelly McGrath Martinson, the author of Inspired Living, is our guest, and is your book available in various bookstores and Amazon and Barnes and Noble and all that kind of stuff?
You got it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. It's available at Amazon. It's available at Barnes and Noble, both on the ground stores and online. Some local mom and pop stores have picked it up around the nation, and then interestingly enough, Rite Aid, pharmacy on the East Coast. They picked up thousands, so you can get them there too. If you're on the East Coast.
Oh, right. Rite Aid, you're saying. The pharmacy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So what else? So again, about you were grateful for your faith. What else were you grateful for?
So I was grateful for my faith. I was grateful and still am grateful for my relationship. You know, I, like I say in the book, when 98% of the time, I am so grateful for my husband, my partner. He's my best friend. And then I jokingly say the other 2% of the time I'm trying to figure out where to hide the body. But
right.
The truth is, having a partner like him, you know, we were kind of yin and yang through Dylan's sickness, which was good. You know, when he was down, I'd say, nope, come on, get up. We got to Google this. We got to figure it out. It's not classic autism. This is something different. We've got to figure it out. And when I was down, he'd say, come on, Kel, make some more calls, you know. So I know I'm grateful for my husband and the relationship. And again, it's not perfect. Anybody who's listening might say, oh, well, it's, you know, but it's not. I know I'm not naive enough to think I'm in this perfect relationship. But again, it's perfectly imperfect, which is
right.
A blessing to me. I'm blessed that God or whoever put him in my path. Yeah.
And to have that awareness that it doesn't have to be perfect.
Right.
Which is a big recognition, big acknowledgement. You know what? I have
sure.
a great relationship, and it's not perfect.
Well, it's interesting you say that. I don't know if you ever read Gabby Reese. She's married to Laird Hamilton, and she wrote a book, My Foot is Too Big for This Glass Slipper. And she really, I mean, it's a great book for women because it kind of talks about this, like, this idea when you get married that, oh, now we're going to get the picket fence and we're going to have the 2.5 kids
right.
and the dual income and maybe we'll have a boat. And
uh-huh.
even the title, like my foot, she was a, you know, she's a big volleyball player and a supermodel.
And who is it again now?
Gabby Reese.
Gabby Reese.
She married Laird Hamilton, who's a pro surfer.
Okay, that's where I know that name.
Yeah. And just even the title, My Foot is Too Big for the Glass Slipper, it just... I think everybody's foot is too big. You know, that fairy tale, it's just not the real world. And sometimes if we just change our expectations of what life's supposed to be like, we open the door to the possibility of how great life is. Do you know what I mean? Like if you reframe the way you're looking for it, you stop looking for the fairy tale and, you know, enjoy what's right in front of us.
I think that's good advice to give up the fairy tale. But how do we, you know, what if we're, like, basically idealist? I think in some ways I'm idealistic in a lot of ways, and as I was when I was younger. And I'm an optimist, yet I also realize that life can be really hard at times. And there's always that edge that we're playing with that we have to
right.
come to terms with, that idea that, hey, you know, I want to be optimistic, but also realize that there is this edge that it can be painful at times, and I can be disappointed, and to not give up wanting to be inspired.
Right.
Because I think what happens is if we are too pragmatic, we lose this desire to want to live
Agreed.
An inspired life. And so what do you... So does your book really talk about that, or for people
that
have been disappointed
a
lot?
Yeah, for sure. And it also talks about just reframing. We have a whole chapter on reframing the way you look at something. I have a mentor. He's the greatest guy. He's also a publisher of a magazine. I guess he's about 75 right now, and he's got the heart of a 20-year-old, and anytime I have a problem, I will call him up and I'll say, you know, Joe, I'm mad at so-and-so because this happened at work or whatever it is. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, he's great because he talks about reframing it. He's like, he'll always say, and he calls me Rockstar. Hey, Rockstar, you gotta reframe that. You got to reframe the way you're thinking.
He calls you Rockstar, you said?
Yeah. Hey, Rockstar.
Hey, Rockstar.
You got to change the way you're thinking, you know. So I think one way to... is to keep people like Joe in your life. You know, that's one way
right.
to kind of, you know, I think keep yourself inspired is just surround yourself with inspiring people, with people that aren't going to, say, wallow with you, but people who are going to say, hey, Rockstar, come on,
right.
reframe it. Look for the
yeah,
good,
yeah.
you know. So
uh-huh.
I think that's really important, is just surrounding yourself with people that are going to inspire you, and maybe even, you know, fire the people out of your life that aren't aren't inspiring you, you know?
That's a hard thing to do. It's a hard thing
to
let go of people. And I think part of it is there's a part of, I know for myself, there's a part of me that feels guilty about letting go of certain people that I've known for a long time.
Yeah,
and I'm just in a total different place. And I do kind of, there's a part of me. Obviously, there's another part of me that doesn't feel guilty. But I mean, there is this idea, somebody you've known for many, many years, you just, maybe they call you and you don't call them back. And it's a hard one. Or some of them are just like they were in high school.
Right.
And they haven't really grown. Yeah, that is a big one. So
sure.
We were talking off air about some of the concepts in your different little segments of the book, and you had one, I believe you said, about how to handle difficult people. Did I hear that right?
Yes, you sure did. So there's a chapter in the book that I titled "Thank You is the New F You," and we know what that stands for. We sure do, because we want to say it a lot of times to people. It started actually before it was ever written in print. It started as an experiment. I found myself getting really just angry at little things. If somebody would beep at me in the car or cut me off, you know, I would, what did I say, give them the finger or flip them the bird or
right.
mouth the word F you. And, you know, you find that people are doing that, or at least I find that it's not just me. Everybody seems to be saying, and you know, it's whether it's the streets of New York City or an airport or anywhere, people just seem to be saying, like, F you to each other all the time. And I thought, I said to my husband, I'm going to change that. I'm not going to do that anymore. And he said, good luck, because he knows that I have a little bit of a temper. So I said, no,
right.
I'm going to say thank you. I'm going to say thank you. The next time I want to say F you, I'm going to say thank you. And he's like, you know, he issued me a challenge. He said, it's never going to happen. So that summer we were on a boardwalk path. So in Long Island, there's an island called Fire Island, and you can take a boardwalk there. And everybody rides bikes on this boardwalk, even though it says in big signs, no bikes. But people have been riding bikes there, you know, since before I was born. The boardwalk is filled with bikes. So we're riding with the kids, and mind you, it was around the same time my husband was going in between his surgeries, and my son was starting to come out of his epilepsy, and it was just a great day, and we're on the boardwalk, and we're riding our bikes, and my husband's behind me, and these two people that are walking on the boardwalk start yelling, get off the boardwalk, can't you effing read the signs? Meanwhile, here I am, I'm with two kids, you know, we're not doing anything. So instead
right.
of what you normally would want to do is go, shut up, or whatever it is you want to yell at them, I rang my bell. I have a bell on my bike. Ding, ding, ding. Thank you so much. And my husband was behind me, and he said they stopped in their tracks. He said they looked like so mad, like their heads were going to explode. They were like, did you just say thank you? She did not just say thank you. So really, I got the last word, and I left with some, you know, a smile.
I'm going to have to try that.
Yeah, it's great. It's great when somebody else can witness it behind you. So, because my husband was laughing. He's like, oh, you did it. He's like, you proved me wrong. Matt, watching those people, they were so mad. And even when people do it in the car, you know, they toot their horn if you don't move your car fast enough at a green light. And instead of, like, you know, flapping your hand up at them in aggravation, when I wave and say thank you, you know, it diffuses the situation, and it also confuses them. And they kind of, you know, maybe, hopefully, they step back and go, oh, man, I was just a jerk. Like, what did it matter if she sat at the light for 2 seconds? And maybe, you know, they reevaluate. You know, who knows?
So what's another one? What's another good little segment to kind of whet
for,
our appetite?
For thank you is the new F you?
Well, or no, 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 I mean, another segment is a different topic.
Yeah, sure. So there's a whole bunch of different things. So thank you is the new F you is a really funny one. It's tongue-in-cheek. There's a lot of laughter in that. Forgiveness was a really hard chapter to write for myself, because as I was writing it, initially I was writing it about forgiving others and letting go of pain, you know, past pain, and just identifying that if you have past pain with somebody, that that was part of your history and that's part of your story, but you can walk away from it now. And the goal of writing that, I thought at the time, you know how writing goes, was to encourage people to get over, or not even get over, but just sort of move past maybe some pain that that's holding them back. You know, maybe a past, let's say a past relationship, the pain of it is so strong that it's keeping you from moving on. And one of the things that I found when I was writing the book and writing this chapter was I kept going back to forgiving myself. I don't know if it's Irish Catholic guilt. I don't know what it stems from. But I found, and again, this is why I would love for more people to write, because when I just sat there and wrote, it took a different turn, and I kind of told myself, like, forgive yourself for being not so available to your elderly parents. Make yourself more available, but also forgive yourself. And forgive your 10-year-old self for not being nice to the 10-year-old girl on the bus. You were 10, and you regretted it for the last 30 years. It caused you your ulcer. Forgive that part of you. Forgive that part of your history. You know, because I don't think we're all these great, evolved, amazing, kind creatures for every second of our life. And the thing is, when we're not kind, or at least somebody like me, and I think we're all kind of like this, we hold on to it, and then we have a judgment against our own self. So I think the forgiveness chapter was, for me, cathartic because, like I said, I went to write it about forgiving others. And there is a good, beefy, chunky, you know, commentary about forgiving others. But there was this really more interesting chapter about forgiving self-forgiveness.
I have, you know, in my first book, Dancing on the River, I have about forgiveness, forgiving others,
yep,
forgiving yourself, and forgiving God.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know, I threw that one in there, too. Yeah.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
And in the book, we talk about not so much, that's actually a really, I don't know that we have that forgiveness of God, but that's a really, that's a profound step, and it's necessary.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Really necessary. Because
so
you,
how
you
can
like,
people, Kelly, I want to, we're running out of time, so I want to make sure that if people want to get a hold of you, how they can do that. Want to tell
us? Yeah, sure. So you can, there's a few ways, but ayearofinspiredliving.com is one way. You can contact us through the form there. You can buy the book on Amazon.com. We have a Facebook, really fun thing we're doing. Author Kelly McGrath Martinson on our Facebook. You can like our page, and then each month we're going to do a live on the first of the month at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we're just going to review that chapter. And, you know, depending on how many people get on and ask questions, that will kind of say how long it'll go. But it'll start at 4, and I'm just going to review the chapter and answer any questions or comments. So that's another way, a great social media way to get involved with us. And email is kelly@nalimag.com. So those are the ways they can catch
me. So say that again, Kelly, K-E-L-L-I?
Yeah, K-E-L-L-Y.
Why? Okay. At?
N like natural, A like awakenings, L like long, I like island, M like magazine, A like apple, G like girl, .com. We call our little magazine Nally Mag for natural awakenings.
Okay. So say that again. It's Kelly at natural.
N like natural, A like awakenings, L like long, I like island, M like magazine, A like apple, G like girl, .com. Kelly at nallymag.com.
Uh-huh. And I noticed that you had an Hawaiian expression on your website about.
Yes.
What was it? What, you want to
so
say
Malama
that?
Pono. Yeah, that's how people in Hawaii will often greet each other, Malama Pono.
Uh-huh.
And it's just say, it's take care of you. So I always sign my own publisher letters, Malama Pono, like take care of you, however it is, whether it's with forgiveness, laughter, loving more, smiling, cleaning the environment, cleaning a beach, you know, just take care of you however you can and every day. Malama Pono.
Well, thank you, Kelly McGrath-Martinson, for being the guest of the Inspire Possibility Show, and to say to our listeners, every week we have other amazing people, and some of you have been listening regularly. You know, we've been doing a good job getting people to kind of share their wisdom with us, and it takes a commitment to write a book, and it takes a commitment really to take a stand for something. And what I like really about your story, Kelly, is that you definitely have had your share of challenges, and you're still a voice of optimism.
You've been listening to Inspire Possibility Show with Mark Susnow. To learn more about Mark Susnow, go to inspirepossibility.com and click on the contact button. Schedule a complimentary visit with Mark or email him at mark@inspirepossibility.com. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine.